You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Hi, you're listening to KYRS Thin Air Community Radio, and this is Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I'm bringing you the fourth series of interviews from my ongoing Praxis Summer Roadshow, taped on location across South Dakota this past week. The theme is Indigenous-led resistance to fossil fuel extraction, environmental, and human destruction in general. The first interview is with Chaz Jewett, a longtime activist who's worked on issues from reproductive rights for women to anti-racist organizing to the Keystone XL pipeline. We talked about how these issues are connected and how 2015 is the best of times and the worst of times to be an organizer. Here's Chaz Jewett.
My name is Chaz Jewett. I'm a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. I started organizing in around 2002 with the Sierra Club doing environmental organizing. Learned what an organizer was then. Before then, I guess I always have been organizing for a long time. I've been organizing my whole life because pretty much, you know, I like to visit and share information. So that's what I am.
Yeah. What are you working on now?
Right now I'm working on, Well, we've got a lot of like race war kind of things happening in Rapid City, well, in the country. And so I got myself in the middle of a process that is a crisis intervention model, an Indigenous crisis intervention model. So we've been using that to sort of engage folks in Rapid City, pretty much the most racist, you know, place in Western South Dakota. And you know, there's a lot of segregation. It's pretty much two different worlds. And if people, white people, we don't know each other. We don't mix. We tolerate each other as opposed to, genuinely respecting and, you know, honoring each other. And so that's where we're at. And this is, you know, 200 years in the making, the colonists living in our sacred lands kind of situation. And so it's a huge, you know, it's a huge thing. And, you know, as an organizer, you try to keep at least some distance from yourself and what you do. And this has been, incredibly difficult for me. So, to keep that distance. And so it's one of those things is, you know, that we do, if we do this for a long time, I've been organizing for 15 years or so, whatever, you sort of, you know, think if this is going to be the thing that makes you, you know, go to teaching or leave, you know, to do something else or, you know, go to farming. My dream, whenever I think about not organizing anymore, I think about, farming and like doing a goat farm and doing a whole big farm. And actually that's something that, you know, I've been dreaming about for a long time. So maybe that will happen, but it seems like I get stuck up into, you know, what's happening and issues, with the race stuff and the KXL stuff. I've been doing that for, you know, a long time. And so I can't really abandon it, you know? Sure. So I gotta stick with those kinds of, you know, that stuff, the environmental stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the history with the pipeline?
Yes.
And, where everything's at now?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you know, the PUC stuff, everyday stuff, I'm not paying attention to that so much because I really, you know, it's stuck, you know, in South Dakota, we granted the, TransCanada, the permit, mm-hmm. Already. And, you know, in the processes, of which I'm an intervener for, they've basically said that, you know, that folks who are intervening now at this point have no standing. And, you know, the only people that really matter are the people who intervened in the first time. And now we can't consider, you know, the differences in the environment since then. So we can't consider climate change, you know, so it's like so what they're saying, TransCanada, you know, reapplying for this permit is that nothing has changed at all in the years that has since they got their permit.
Which is 2010.
Right. And so, you know, it's 2015 now and we're like in the midst of, you know, last year, 2 years ago in Rapid City, we had a blizzard called Atlas that, you know, shut down the the town of Rapid City for several days and, you know, killed thousands of livestock across the prairie and had a huge impact. And, you know, for them to deny that climate change exists, that came in October, that blizzard. And so, you know, that's totally strange. And, you know, there's the ferocity of that blizzard was something that no one has seen before. And I've never seen. I'm 43 years old and, you know, things are different. The birds are singing early or later. You know, there's the insects are bigger, it's here, it's changed and everyone knows it. You know, 5 years ago or so, I was riding horseback at the ranch with my little niece and it was January and there was no snow on the ground and she and my niece and my little sister and they both like sort of like we started talking about how weird it was and they both teared up and said there's supposed to be snow now, you know, and like things are supposed to be one way and things are totally in a different way. And you know, as indigenous people, we live so close to the earth, you know, we have all these, you know, challenges with, you know, living in a dying world. And so a lot of our young kids choose not to live. They do suicide and they do things. They see the world around them and they choose not to live here. They choose to go back to, you know, wherever they came from because this is a dying planet. And they see that. And why would they? Why would we all want to pretend it's not? And yet, in order for us to be Americans and not and be, you know, sane, we have to pretend that we're not killing the planet. And, you know, a lot of people can't do that. You know, a lot of people on the margins of our society can't do that. And so, you know, it's difficult. So, you know, being indigenous in this world is tough. And we're doing what we can and we're rising now on a huge, you know, huge level. And we're doing what we can because we got to step up. You know, our people, the Lakota, we signed a treaty with the federal government. We weren't conquered. We saw that the writing on the wall was that we weren't going to, you know, be able to push them away because they would keep coming. And so we did the best we could, and we signed a great treaty with them, the Treaty of 1868, which was ratified with the federal government. They ratified that treaty. That's a treaty is the utmost law of the land of which we live. It's never been respected, you know. It's never been honored, and you know, as Lakota people, we always have to take the high road, and
well, that puts you in a bad position when the people willing to take the low road are willing to take the lowest road that, you know, kills everyone on the planet, right?
Right.
I mean, so where does that leave? So now there's obviously, like, among the Lakota, but among indigenous people around the world in general are leading on climate change and on addressing it, I think, you know, because some people never forgot how to do this a way that worked for thousands of years, right? So how does that play into that dynamic, that kind of high road dynamic when it?
Well, you know, I think, you know, 2 years ago, well, last February, we had a water meeting in Rapid City that sort of changed my perspective on a lot of stuff. You know, we had our spiritual leaders, our political leaders, our revolutionary leaders all in one room. And we heard the stories of the Fort McMurray Athabascan peoples, and we heard the stories of the, you know, the tar sands and all of that, and we rose up with ferocious language saying this is enough, you know, we're not going to let that pipeline through our country because that's the only thing that we can say about this. That's the only thing we can say about that. We can say it's not coming through our land, and you know, our land is all of Western South Dakota. You know, even if they don't recognize it, the federal government and the state government, even if they don't recognize it, that's our land, the Aboriginal treaty lands of which we own by law. And so if they don't want to respect that, they don't have to, but we're going to enforce it. And I think that's what was the genuine, you know, kind of agreement with our people, in our people. And, you know, to get our people to agree on anything is pretty amazing. And so, and also there, you know, our spiritual leaders told us, you know, we have to tell our stories and we have to, you know, let people know who we are so that we can, you know, bring them around to our way of thinking. We have to reach out. We have to make more relatives. We have to make more allies. We have to, you know, just really, you know, allow ourselves to you know, change the direction of the world by reaching out and doing the things and standing in unity. You know, I think that's the point. You know, I mean, we're all, you know, we might not all agree on nothing, on a lot of stuff. But sure enough, we're all going to be standing there on pier at pier on Sunday, mm-hmm. You know, together, to let folks know that, you know, it's got to stop, you know, we got to stop it. And, you know, I think that it's a, you know, it's a powerful time, on both sides, and, you know, they're going to continue to do as much as they can, in order to, you know, use all the resources, mm-hmm. and we're not going to be able to survive that need and that greed. And so we're going to have to change the way we think about things, the way we live, the way we, you know, what resources we use on a daily basis. You know, there's a lot of, you know, this is all personal, you know, this waking up, this going forward, this, you know, choosing, you know, we over I, is, it's all personal. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that. Each of us has to do it, has to get to that place, has to do the work and figure out that, you know, so it's, you know, it's a challenge. And, yeah. You know, it's, and organizing, is difficult right now. And, but rewarding and fantastic and
super necessary.
Right. Yeah. And critical. Yeah. So, you know, it's a good time to be an organizer. It's a bad time to be an organizer. It's just kind of, you know, that kind of stuff, you know? Mm-hmm.
So how, I want to kind of loop back around.
Yeah.
You're doing environmental stuff and that's your background and you can't really look away from it when, you know, a pipeline's going to come through the Black Hills, like, as you were saying, mm-hmm. Sacred place. Yeah, beautiful place. I can attest mm-hmm. now that I'm here. But then how does that loop back into work with racism and how are those, do you feel like they're connected? Do you feel like people are making those connections?
You know, I made that connection, I think, for myself personally, this last year, which is, you know, which makes me seem a little dim-witted having done this for so long, just figuring it out. But, you know, for me, you know, I think that, with what's been happening with the Ferguson and the, you know, the minority disproportionate population in our prisons and, you know, just the militarization of stuff, you know, that, you know, this, we're reaching a crescendo, where, you know, where people, are resources and they're being treated badly. And, you know, our human resources are being depleted just like our environmental resources. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, I sort of knew. I've been doing this peace and justice stuff and, restorative justice. The very first political act I ever had when I came to Rapid City was on police brutality. A man was shot wielding a knife from 20 feet away. And so, you know, I had to, you know, stand with my people and say, that's not appropriate for our sick and our, you know, incapacitated people, our drunk people to be dying on the streets. You know, there's other ways to deal with these situations. And so, you know, it's all the same thing, you know, the respect of the human, respect of the earth, you know, and we are the earth's people. And so all that we do to the people and to the earth are the same. You know, we rape and exploit the people and we rape and we exploit the earth. And so until we stop that, which is huge, because it's ingrained and it's in our system and it's, you know, intrinsic to our identity as Americans to believe that we, you know, came up out of nothing, that we manifested destiny, mm-hmm. that, you know, this was, you know, something that we created. This is this beautiful, amazing country. And, you know, there's so much wonderful, amazing stuff about America that, yeah, you know, it is something like that. But, you know, but there's some fundamental things that are wrong, and our wrong has been, you know, bleeding out to the rest of the world. You know, the wars of choice and for resources are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how, have there been any ways in which working against the pipeline, because I know across the country, there's kind of like partnerships between Native people working on it, ranchers, you know, like all of these kind of seemingly unlikely partnerships. Is that happening here? And is that helping kind of break down some of the barriers and start conversation around race?
Sure. You know, I think, you know, some of the more committed white allies, cowboys or what have you. I don't like to say cowboys because there's a lot of Indian cowboys too. And my people were cowboys. I grew up on a ranch. I'm a fifth generation rancher. So, you know, we're cowboys too. So, but you know, Indian cowboys and Indians is not, it doesn't, you know, it's words that describe, you know, a whole bunch of different people. But you know, I think that, you know, that there are some folks whose eyes and whose worlds have been opened to unlikely friendships and alliances and things like that, and because of the pipeline, sure. You know, are those things, you know, translate into the other parts of the movements? You know, it's one movement that we're doing. It's the people's movement. You know, the people's movement is also the Earth's movement. And, you know, they don't, you know, the Earth movement people don't get that. And so they spend a lot of resources on the Earth and yet, you know, really have a lot of disdain for the people. Hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot of anger, you know, but the people are doing it. The stupid people who don't know, the stupid people who, you know, go to Walmart, the stupid people who, you know, who use all these resources unknowingly. You know, some of the folks in our movement, Earth, the environmental movement, can live with not any using any resource. You know, a very like exploitive world, right? They can live in situations that have them using no plastic or having them, you know, eating organic food and, you know, growing it or doing all this stuff because they have that privilege. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a very privileged movement that the environmental is very, very environmental movement is very privileged. You know, they talk about, you know, they ban GMO foods from their parties. They, you know, do, you know, you know, they have, you know, catered local foods at their meetings and things like that. You know, it's like, and, you know, and then they have the, you know, Indian people who are here living on styrofoam and, you know, and souping up with, you know, with buckets and just, you know, I mean, living, having to do the necessities of living in a poverty kind of situation. You know, those two worlds, those two guys, are they talking more? Maybe, you know, maybe things are going, you know, I mean, I do think that, you know, within each of the movements, even the reproductive justice movement, of which I've, you know, hugely a part of, I got to spend some time with Gloria Steinem earlier this summer. And, you know, and I was a part of defeating two abortion bans in the state of South Dakota. I'm deeply entrenched in that movement as well. Are those women standing on the lines with us, you know, in protecting our children about, you know, in racism kind of stuff? Some of them, sure. And so that's a good thing. But, you know, all of the movements have to be decolonized, right? Mm-hmm. They have to be, you know, they have to understand how we got here and understand that, you know, the harms and the wrongs that were done. And, you know, be able to rectify that within, you know, within themselves and then be able to, you know, work in a transformative way.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you think that's done? I mean, is it just talking about it? I mean, these are so taboo being from, you know, a place that's not as extreme as Rapid City, but, you know, a lot of my family lives in kind of a similar area of like segregation.
Right.
And they're right over here and we're over here.
Right.
How do you think it's just busting open those taboos and, you know,
well,
saying saying white supremacy at the press conference and saying genocide at the press conference, or what is it?
Well, a little bit of both, you know, a little bit of that. I mean, I do think that, you know, there has to be brave, courageous people who are willing to have these conversations in a real way. You know, people like, I mean, yesterday we had this, we had the Chamber of Commerce. We had the president of some banks and some businesses and some people who were standing up and saying, hey, you know, we don't want to be known as racist city. And we acknowledge that, you know, we're not going to solve the problem, but we're engaged in real authentic talks. So, you know, those people have to also have this, you know, and I did, because I know all this stuff and all these movements. I said, you know, you guys, you know, one of those, we're talking about the Keystone Pipeline, you know, and I was like, and how do you guys all feel about the Keystone Pipeline? And then a woman's like, well, I don't know what the official chamber position is. And I said, you know, well, what you need to know is all the Indians are opposed to it. You know, that's the divide between your people and my people. You know, we're all opposed to it. My aunt, who's one of the most conservative women, that I know, she said, my girl, when are you guys going to stop that pipeline? You know, we got to stop what's happening. And we're trying to do that. But, you know, racism is one thing. Environmentalism is another one. You know, women's rights is another thing. But, you know, all of us, I think, you know, organizers are trying to figure out, hey, we're, you know, this is kind of the same thing. And as soon as we get people from each of those movements ready to stand with each other, ready to share their networks, ready to share their resources, then, you know, then things will change. But, you know, and hopefully that's going in that direction. But, mm-hmm. you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, I mean, I feel hopeful some days, and some days I don't. You know, you do this work for a long time, and you start to see the things that matter. And, you know, I told you yesterday that, I after this last election, when we lost so badly and we didn't do anything and I put so much energy into it, I was done. I was going to go do that goat farm and I was ready to be done with it. And then this stuff happened and I felt drawn to it and I felt like I had to do it. You know, as someone who's been organizing in Rapid City for a long time, I knew I needed to be a part of this conversation because it was, you know, almost my responsibility. You know, the first thing about being a Lakota is to be a good relative. You know, it's our most important value is to be a good relative. And you have to know that you're related to everything, the birds and the bees and you and bears and everything, you know. And so when this happened with our kids and with Alan Locke being shot, I knew I had to be a good relative and do the things that I knew how to do, which is to talk to people. And so now we're talking about racism. You know, and so I can, with my experience in all these movements, see how it's all together, and I can have all those conversations. So, you know, I think that, you know, as more organizers like me sort of get to that, you know, realization that it's not, we're not in isolation. It's not just one movement, or it's not, you know, segmented movements. It's not multiple movements. It's not the environmental movement. It's the people's movement. And the people's movement includes the earth because it includes indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And we are of earth, right?
Yeah. Well, we all are. It just is accepting it as a fact.
Right. Rather than that's so true. Humanity. Yeah. I mean, we're human beings. Yeah. I mean, that's what we said yesterday. It's so far hard. It's not hard for us to be human. Mm-hmm. It's not. We just have to remember how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I mean, the clock's ticking, but I think that as more people realize it, hopefully the infrastructure is still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing about that. I mean, America is so wrong in so many ways, but the strength of it in some ways, I mean, is the strength of how short the project has been so far.
Mm.
You know, a couple hundred years, done a ton of damage in a couple hundred years, but there's, you know, the portions of the indigenous population that are here, it's not very long ago.
No.
You know, and that's still...
No, 150 years. I mean, my grandfather was born in 1890. You know, that was the year of Wounded Knee. You know, my grandmother was born in 1902. So you know, I span that bit of history in one family. You know, my dad was, you know, the 10th of 10 children, and he grew up going to the boarding schools and being, you know, being stolen from his family as a 5-year-old, you know, and beaten by priests for speaking his language. And you know, the amazing thing about, you know, this movement, this what's happening right now, is that there are people, Indian people, who survived that and who can lead this. You know, imagine how amazing we are as human beings, because we can overcome what colonization did to us just last year. You know, just it's ongoing. Mm-hmm. You know, the genocide is continuing, and we live with that, and we know that, you know. They told us to be educated, and we got educated, and now we're angry. You know, I mean, you know, it's a two-edged sword, you know. Mm-hmm. They want us to become Americans. Well, I am an American, and I know the law, and it's not okay for what's happening. You know, it's not okay, you know, for the industry to be running the Congress, and to running, you know, making all the decisions in the parties. You know, the industry has taken over and of everything. So it's all industry. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're not just workers, you know, I mean, that's what they think we are, and buyers, you know. Mm-hmm. They just want us to sit around and consume, you know, and, you know, that's not what America is. Mm-hmm. That's what America has been told that they are for the last 10, 15 years. You know, you can see it. You can see it since the Reagan administration, since you know, the corporatization of things, and you know, both parties are complicit in the destruction of our ideals as Americans. You know, both parties are giving themselves over to greed and glory, and have left the people behind. And so, you know, the people are rising up. You know, you get what you do. Are we going to get it together before it's too late? Good question.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, we will literally see.
Good question. You and I
are young enough to, like, right. We're going to find out.
Right.
If we win or not, I think. I'm pretty confident that we're going to see.
Yeah. Well, and we got to do a lot of work, you know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, so much work. It's so huge, you know. Where do you start, you know?
Wherever you are.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where do you think you start?
That's right. Well, I'm doing racism full time. You know, that's what I'm doing now. You know, I'm, you know, and the good thing about me is, you know, as an organizer, I've always learned, you know, am I still being effective? Are they still hearing me? Am I still doing what the people want me to do? You know, is, and, you know, this feels right. This feels like this is what's supposed to be happening. And it's always, a tenuous place where you are in front of the people. And so, you got to make sure that you don't go too far ahead, because they won't follow you. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not, you know, in any way saying that I'm a leader of the people, or speaking for the people, or speaking for anyone. You know, I'm speaking from my own experience as an organizer, and I'm, and what I'm saying is resonating with a lot of people, a lot more people than were 5 years ago. That's for sure. I haven't changed one bit in my rhetoric, but now people are liking it, and people are supporting it, and people are, you know, joining with me and saying they agree. And, you know, so there's some kind of awareness and some kind of awakeness happening. So that's good.
If you're just joining us on the broadcast, you're listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and that was Chaz Jewett talking to me just outside of Rapid City, South Dakota, about tribal and rural organizing. As she said, a lot of awareness is building around these issues, and part of that work is happening a few hours away at the Rosebud Spirit Camp, a spiritual site and center of fossil fuel resistance run by the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. I drove there to see the camp and talked with Leota Ironcloud, who's been living there since the camp was established in spring of 2014.
My name is Leota Ironcloud, and we are at the spiritual camp, Doyate Wahachunka Wawachu spiritual camp, near Ideal, South Dakota. And this camp was organized by the Rosebud Sioux, the two departments of the Rosebud Sioux tribe. So we are on the Rosebud Reservation.
And how did you get involved, and what is the purpose of the camp originally, and what's the kind of relation to the pipeline work?
Okay. The purpose of the camp is It's to protect our water and our land, and also, you know, these man camps that come along. But it's against the Trans-Canada Keystone XL pipeline, which is proposed to be coming right through here, right at the right where this camp is at. Right. So it's an objection to the pipeline.
How long have you been here?
This camp started on March 29th of last year, and I've been here since then.
Wow. And what has that been like? I mean, organizing around the pipeline. Do you have a background in organizing or anything?
No, this is like my first time doing this ever, getting active with anything. You know, I mean, all my life, I donated to Sierra Club, but I never did really actively get active, you know, involved. And so when I heard about this camp, I heard about it, and then I read an article about the man camps. And that just kind of tipped me, because I'm a grandma now. Mm-hmm. I got a five-year granddaughter. And in that article, what really caught my eye was these man camps. One of our tribal members, she worked at a man camp. She's a police officer. And she got to patrol at a man camp. And one night, I guess there was a five-year-old girl running down the road. And so they picked her up, and she was running from a man camp, and she was raped. And I'm like, no way. And then there's a man camp, a proposed plan. And the plan is by Cologne, just east of here, not far from here. And it's close to our reservation. I'm close to a lot of these towns.
So those are where the workers are all housed for the pipeline work?
Okay. They're planning, yeah. So that's what caught my eye about this. And then now that being out here for a year, I learned a lot more about the pipeline, the tar sands, the bitumen, and everything. And we even had visitors come from Canada. They stayed here at this camp, and they told about their stories, what's going on up there on the front lines by Fort McMurray, about the tar sands. So, you know, being out here, I did learn a lot.
Yeah. And what's the... So there's a strong connection with the people at the tar sands?
Yes.
That they've come here?
Yes. I mean, even stronger, yeah. And I didn't know what tar sands, you know, a pipeline, you know, I didn't know. I thought it was just like regular oil, what, or not. But it's tar sands, which is it's the dirtiest ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pictures are horrific.
Yes.
I mean, the boreal forest, and then it's just...
Yeah, and then it's
scraped.
You know, and it's bitumen. The cancer, it causes cancer. And of course, tar sands is like one of the biggest contributors of the climate change. And just to thinking about that, the tar, you know, it's tar. And if when a pipeline, when it leaks, it's going to be hard to clean. It'll never be able to be cleaned up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be our future generations that's going to be affected by all this. You know, not us right now, here, sitting here. It's going to be our grandkids' grandkids. You know, we got to look at that far ahead. This camp here, I've noticed that it's known worldwide now. And it's like a symbol of unity and, you know, in the protection of our water and our land and our future generations, you know. So that's what I just wanted to add that in there about this camp. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, thousands and thousands of people came through here. And I'm so humbled and honored to have met them, you know, like you know, coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people do come with really good spirits, you know, good thoughts, good hearts, and you can feel it. And, you know, this place is protected by spirits. And in our culture, you know, we believe in the law of nature. You know, we're connected to the ground that we walk on. So, you know, with this pipeline coming through, you know, that the proposed pipeline coming through, it's going to affect everything, the insects, the plants, the birds, the animals. I mean, everything. It's going to affect everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it cannot come through.
Yeah.
And we will make sure it will not come through. You know, being out here, you know, I think we're physically, mentally, spiritually prepared to stop anybody that will dig the ground. So...
When I talked with Leota at the Rosebud Spirit Camp, we were joined on the phone by Gary Doerr, one of the interveners in the complicated Public Utilities Commission process that is underway to approve or reject the pipeline's entry into this land. He explained his connection to the project and the ways the legal processes are flawed in this case. Again, you're listening to Praxis. Here's Gary Doerr.
Well, I'm one of the interveners in the case at the Public Utility Commission. Although, at this point, that doesn't amount to much with the way that they have cut everybody's testimony and evidence from the hearing. So basically what an intervener does, we are the ones that are opposing it. And so we have an opportunity to present facts and evidence and testimony normally. But that hasn't occurred here. The Public Utility Commission for South Dakota has basically ripped up jurisprudence, morality, and ethics in an elected position, and basically have eliminated every single, every single opposing intervener's testimony and piece of evidence to the point where it's useless. And so one of the attorneys that actually in the hearing 2 days ago said to the commissioners, what's the point of the hearing? if all we're going to have is TransCanada, what's the point of even having interveners? And so it's a violation of the due process of all the parties involved. So that's kind of where I'm at. And where you're sitting at the Spirit Camp, I was one of the people that helped build it and occupied it in the beginning. And I was helping out with the media and the logistics at the camp. So I've been involved since the start. Since before that, we started in ceremony, even before we put the camp up.
Wow. And how long will the camp be here?
Well, we made a promise in the beginning to the people that the camp will stay up as long as until President Obama rejects the permit, we defeat the permit in South Dakota, or construction starts and the camp will then change in nature. Mm. Right now the camp is a spiritual camp. If the construction starts going, that camp is the last stand for the Rosebud Sioux tribe. And so that camp will change from spirit camp into an occupation camp, and we will perform direct action, and the pipeline will not go through.
Wow. And are there other places like this along the route of the pipeline?
Yes, up on the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe by Eagle Butte, there's another spiritual camp up there. And then on Lower Brule, they have another camp, and it's set up to oppose the power lines that are coming from Lower Brule that will supply the transfer station, which is about 9 miles from where you're at right now by Witten. But the Lower Brule Sioux tribe has changed their leadership, so it might not be necessary because the last chairman, we believe, is the one that approved the power line to cross the Lower Brule Sioux Reservation. But that would be illegal because it takes the entire council to approve that.
Oh, good. So, but it sounds like you have a lot of good support and that people are pretty steadfast. Would you say that tribal members support this pretty much across the board?
Yeah, and everyone's, in the beginning everyone wanted us to run around and have major protests and, be out there stomping our feet. And we knew from ceremony this was going to be a long run, and there would be no need for, direct action for quite a while. And so the people have stood by us. They know what the camp stands for. It's the prayers of all the people. That is the physical embodiment of the prayers of not just the tribal people, but all of our neighbors in the surrounding communities. We, we're joined up with the Cowboy Indian Alliance, and we work closely with them. They support all of our actions. And they come up there and visit the camp every now and then and deliver food and firewood every now and then. So we also have some of the support of the local people of Winter, South Dakota. They aren't able to say anything, though, because relatives are on the county commission or the city board. And so those people have actually come up to us and thanked us on the side and said they support us. And then just across the road from the spirit camp, when you drove in, there's a ranch on the other side of the road, and they were supporting the pipeline. But they've talked to people, they've actually visited the camp, and now they support us. They know the threat, the direct threat to the water that's underground there, that the pipeline poses, and they know that the environment is at risk also. So they have jumped on board with us. So, you know, the camp is making, a prayerful movement. So it might not always be obvious, but it's making strides forward.
Mm-hmm. And what is the... This is kind of a weird question. What is the spiritual dimension of this place? And you kind of just explained it, I guess, but can either of the two of you talk a little bit about that, about why that's the focus and what role that plays in this fight?
Well, it's the basis of our entire action. We started... Even before we had a camp, we were in meetings, planning meetings, and then we had ceremonies with Chief Leonard Crow Dog. And we were given directions about what to do. And we picked the site, and it was given the okay. And if you go to the southeast corner of the ground that you're on there, down there by the sweat lodge, that's where that corner is, where the pipeline is going to cross right next to our land. And we had five medicine men come to our grand opening, or our camp opening on March 29, 2014. And each one of them buried sacred medicines from the land in that corridor where the pipeline is crossing through. I'm Nez Perce from Idaho, but I live here. I planted Kalskaus along with their medicine in that corridor. Now, there will be, if it comes down to construction, the original plan was for five of us to stake out over that medicine. We'll protect the medicine, and the people will protect us. And that will be our direct action to keep the pipeline from going through.
Wow.
So the connection is to the land, and it's through the medicine there and through our ceremony and our prayer.
Yeah.
But the spirituality part of it is the fact that it's when you go to the Rosebud Sioux Tribe spiritual camp, it's and what that means is the camp where it turns. And it's because the pipeline turns right at the camp, and it goes to the east, southeast, and it goes right around the corner. What we aim to do is to turn the pipeline around and send it back. And so even the name of the camp has a spiritual meaning, but it's a suspended, extended state of prayer.
Mm.
That's what the camp is.
Yeah. Hopefully a broader turning too, right? Away from this whole way of doing things that makes something like tar sands make sense to people, right?
Yes, exactly. And that, you know, that's where why I got involved was when I started to read, I believe his name is Dr. John Connor from Canada. I had been involved in this in 2007 before it was the Keystone Pipeline. There was originally, there was a plan for a 600-foot wide corridor with a categorical exclusion crisscrossing the United States, and they called it an energy corridor.
Mm.
The categorical exclusion meant that there would be no environmental impact statements. it would just be designated by law, and then there would be no studies. It would just be done. And so I was on a team with the Coeur d'Alene tribe. I was the land services manager. We had the environmental planning services manager and the tribal historic preservation officer, and we worked with the natural resources director to come up with a letter, a reply. We joined with a couple of other tribes to get that overturned, and we were successful. Immediately the next year is when the Keystone Pipeline started to become a reality or a plan, because that energy corridor was defeated. During that time is when I was starting to hear about this, all this cancer up at Fort McMurray, Fort Chipline Reserve up in Canada, in Alberta. And, you know, before the tar sands, they had a negligible cancer rate. You know, they couldn't even do cancer studies up there because not enough people got cancer. And after the tar sands started, that's when the cancer rate started to skyrocket. And they actually, per capita, have the highest cancer rate in all of Canada in that tiny little village. Every family is affected by cancer from the tar sands production and the refinement there. So that, you know, that to me spells, you know, that's something really, really bad. And now we're going to put it underground and put it into a pipeline and put it right through our aquifer. You know, to me, that's just stupidity at its heart, you know. And so the choice to make for me was easy because, of course, I like to live ethically and with some morals. Those lacking that would propose that they send this pipeline through our drinking water and over our Mini-Wachoni water line. We have a water line that goes from Fort Pierce, South Dakota, comes south, and it feeds the Lower Boo, Rosebud, Cheyenne River Sioux, and Oglala Sioux tribes with potable drinking water. For many of those people that are on that Mini-Wachoni water line, it's the only source of drinking water that they have. Especially for Pine Ridge, there are places there where the water is not safe to drink.
Mm-hmm.
That pipeline crossing our water line is a direct threat to the tribes, to 94,000 people who are guaranteed that drinking water by the United States. So if you look at this ethically and morally, as you know, my brother Wayne Frederick had told the Public Utilities Commission, it's an easy choice to make. You need to deny it. So those that are lacking morals and ethics and compassion for other human beings will see this as an economic, venture, a gamble.
Yeah.
That hopefully that they can come out on top of it.
Sure.
And it's just, I have no other word. It's stupid, doesn't even come close. It's mm-hmm. just, it's...
Yeah. I don't know if there is a word for it, but, yeah. What do you want people to know about what you're doing out here, or what do you need from people who aren't in this area, or what are some resources for people who want to know more? Sorry, three questions at once.
We have Oyate, Oyate, Oaxaca, Wahachaca, Woechun, Woecun. .org. So Oyate Wahachaca Woechu, and that is the website for the Shielding the People, which is what the camp was formed under, and that's the organization that provides many of the needs for the camp. Paula Antoine is the one that heads that up. And so if people want to donate, you know, they can. There's a PayPal link there, or they can send it to the Rosebud Sioux tribe. And Leona could probably speak to more about the everyday things that we needed that are needed at the camp. And every now and then, like, we need ropes because, you know, the tent and the cheapies, you know, there's a lot of wind, as you know, out there.
Mm-hmm. Right now.
And so the ropes get worn fairly quickly. So the other thing to do would be is if people are in the local area, if they want to send, you know, gift cards from Runnings, that's the local ranch and supply store. You know, that helps us get the needed supplies to keep the tents, the teepees, and just the general, you know, area there maintained. So, you know, we do have some people that around the area that provide food and snacks and those type of things. We're okay pretty much right now for clothing, but when the winter comes, then we are going to start needing some warm clothes for the people that are staying out there.
Great. Is there anything else you want to add for people to hear?
Well, I just think that, you know, it's important that people know that, you know, I've been in I've been an intervener since the start of this, started back in October of last year, 2014, and the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, you know, let's play a fair game. Fair is fair. If we lost the argument, then we lost the argument. But in this case, we have won the argument. There are treaty rights under the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty that give the tribe the right to say who passes through the territory and who lives in the territory, not just the reservation, but the territory. And those are under Article 2 and Article 11 of the 1868 Treaty. Those were ratified into law under 15 Stat 635. It's still a federal law. It's still in the books because it's a treaty. The only one that can abrogate a treaty right is Congress, and they have not done that.
Hmm.
We've won the argument, but the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission doesn't want to hear it. You know, the first amended permit condition that TransCanada has to comply with states that they have to comply with all applicable laws, rules, and regulations. We brought that, I'm one of the people that brought that argument into the hearings at the PUC, and their answer was, well, that's a federal issue, we don't have jurisdiction over it. That's not written into the condition. The condition did not say TransCanada shall apply with, or comply with all applicable laws, rules, and regulations of the state of South Dakota only. So what it does say is it's supposed to be all laws. And if they aren't complying with all the laws, then here in the state, they're not supposed to grant the permit. So that's the battle that we're fighting. They've eliminated all of our witnesses, all of our testimony, and they refuse to face the facts. The facts are that on a tribal level, we've won because of the treaties under the second article or the second clause of the sixth article of the Constitution are that holds that treaties are the supreme law of the land. And that means states cannot preempt a treaty right because they're protected by law. They're the number one, the highest law of the land. So we've won the case. When people go out and say, oh, you guys lost. No, we didn't. They refuse to face the fact that we have won already.
That's all the time we have today, but thanks for listening. If you like what you heard here, you can find links to the podcast on kyrs.org or at facebook.com/praxisradio. You can hear the full interviews you heard here today, along with others from the Praxis Summer Roadshow, at www.truthscout.net. I loved having the chance to talk with Indigenous leaders in the climate movement in South Dakota, and from here I'll be heading into Alberta and British Columbia before flying to Detroit to begin the eastern leg of the roadshow. Stay tuned. You're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.